So the Diana story is just full of endless symbolism, and I'm just skipping the surface here. The detail is absolutely mind-blowing. This is the top of the Pont d'Alma tunnel, and it's, as I mentioned earlier, there is the depiction of the flame held by the Statue of Liberties in Paris and in New York, standing on a black pentagram, the classic satanic symbol. And that is where they take the flowers and stuff now. This area of Paris with the Eiffel Tower, the River Seine, is an ancient, sacred site to this brotherhood. And it's absolutely no coincidence that this is where they brought Diana to die that night. Indeed, when you go through her life in general, you find that the symbolism of the goddess Diana comes up again and again. When she married Prince Charles, they married her in St. Paul's Cathedral. St. Paul's Cathedral is on an ancient site of goddess Diana worship. And when they brought her coffin out of Paris, it wasn't with the Union Jack and the flag of the country, it was with the flag of the royal family, full of these old symbols of the sun going back to the ancient world. And as I've pointed out many times, and with a lot of supporting evidence, the British royal family were definitely involved in her murder. Interestingly, when the crash happened, this guy comes into focus. This is Diana's brother, Earl Spencer. And there's one or two questions I'd like to ask him, really, because the symbolism of the goddess Diana in the ancient world related again and again to the tree grove, which is the sacred place to the goddess Diana. That's where they used to worship her, in the tree grove. Lakes and islands. Those three things keep reoccurring again and again and again in the stories of the goddess Diana. This is where they put her grave. On an island, in the tree grove, in the middle of a lake on the Althorpe estate, the Spencer estate. And those decisions, at least on the surface, were made by Earl Spencer. He also said in a BBC television interview that after the crash, he had a dream in which he was told to put four black swans on the lake around the grave. And the next day, he said he called his estate manager and asked, where do I get four black swans? And his estate manager apparently replied, according to the official story, you've heard then. You've heard what? We've just been given four black swans. Okay, well, the pigs are filling the room again. I don't really accept that. What is the symbolism of four black swans? First of all, when you look into the mind control programs, the swan is very symbolic to the mind control programs. But there's another one. Just take Swan Lake. Swan Lake, in which the white swan, symbolic of the positive, was killed by the black swan, symbolic of the negative. And here you had the positive Diana energy killed by this brotherhood, and the four black swans on the lake are tremendous symbolism, occult symbolism of that negative force overcoming the positive. And in the Althorpe estate now, you have this what you might call temple to Diana. And on many of the aristocratic estates and stately homes of England that carry these reptile human bloodlines, you find either temples to the goddess Diana in the grounds, or areas of the stately home handed over to the goddess Diana. So this lady was a great example of the way that people are not just assassinated, but are assassinated in a way that follows ancient ritual. Because ritual is very powerful. If you do things in a certain ritual way, it generates a much more powerful energy than if you just killed someone in a straightforward way. But as I say, in The Biggest Secret, I go into this in enormous detail, and the symbolism is just stunning of this event. Okay, we're in the modern world. We've come a long way over thousands of years. This brotherhood, as it came out of the Near and Middle East into Europe and then through the British Empire across the world. And we're now at the point where the control of the globe is possible. And we're also at a point, a crossroads, where we can choose to take the road of freedom, or we can choose to stay as we are and allow this agenda to unfold and further imprison, in a most extreme way, the human race in the next few years. Just a choice. We take that choice, this is gone. But we need to make that choice and do something about it. The aim of this agenda over this long period of time has been to create this structure. And don't take my word for it, just look around the world. It's unfolding now. This is not a theory or a prophecy. It's happening on CNN when you turn on every day. You're seeing it unfold. It is to have a world government which would control a world central bank, a world currency, a world army, and a microchip population. The microchip population is already being introduced. Under that structure of world government, the army, incidentally, the world army is designed to be NATO, gathering more and more countries and then becoming the world army by stealth. Under that world government is a European Union, which is now with a single bank and a single currency and very much in place. The American Union, the America's version of the European Union came out of a free trade area called the Common Market, the EEC. The American Union is designed to evolve out of NAFTA, another free trade area, North American Free Trade Agreement. And in 1994, APEC, another free trade area, was created in the East and the Australia area, and that is designed to evolve into the Pacific Union. Under that is designed to come nation states and regions, and then the people, with no power whatsoever to control their own destiny, because the major decisions are made at these higher levels of power, particularly the world level. The microchip is being suggested all over the world. This is a guy at Reading University in England who was microchipped as part of a kind of experiment, but it's not really an experiment. All over the world in our lives now, that we're being prepared to take the microchip. People on one level think it's about electronic tagging, and it's about knowing where people are, and that's okay, that's on one level of it. But it's more than that. The guy I talked about very early on in this video series, the guy with a patch on his chest who works for the CIA against his will, he was telling me, and other people have done too, what the microchip can really do. And if we allow ourselves to be microchipped on the basis of, it's better than having credit cards and money, that's what the cashless society is about. It's about getting people to be microchipped. And we'll never lose our child again if we microchip them at birth. All this stuff's being suggested now. But he said, you know, when people are microchipped, they are giving external control of their physical health, their emotions, and their mental processes, their mental faculties, their mental perception to whoever controls the microchip. And if everyone's microchipped, you suddenly got mass control on the end of a button, almost, of the population. That's the idea. That's what we're being drawn into as part of this agenda as it unfolds. And if we say no to one thing only and then go back to watching The Price is Right, let us say no to the microchip, because then at least we've got a bit of a chance here. The United Nations symbol came out of the Freemasonic symbolism also. The United Nations was created to be a focus for the centralization of global power, like that world government on that earlier slide. The sections in that target-type symbol of the United Nations, there's 33, just happens to be 33 degrees of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. And it's kind of nicely framed, isn't it, with those leaves. I wonder where that came from. Oh, yes, I remember now. It's a Freemasonic symbol, again, transferred to the United Nations. These symbols of these various levels of control, the European Union has 12 stars in a circle, etc., they're all esoteric symbols. Now, this, I guess of everything I've said so far, this next few minutes are going to be the most important, because I'm talking about the most powerful means of mass manipulation which has been played, this card, for thousands of years, and we're still falling for it. And it is this more than anything that's advanced this agenda to centralization of global power. I call it problem, reaction, solution. Works like this. You want to bring something in here, centralization of power, more power for the police, more power for security agencies, whatever. And you know that if you do it openly and honestly, there's going to be a reaction against it. We're not having this. This is a global fascist state. Go away. We're not standing for this. This is outrageous. That's what you're going to get if you do it openly. So you don't. What you do is you create a problem here. Could be society breaking down, so there is more crime, so people get in fear of being mugged and being burgled. Could be war, it could be a terrorist bomb, an economic collapse, whatever. and you create a problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You get a Lee Harvey Oswald. You get these patsies, as they call them in America, who are blamed for events that they weren't involved in. You then get the people in general, by the way that you report your problem, to react by demanding you do something. This can't go on. Do something. What are they going to do about it? And at that point, those who've covertly created the problem and got that reaction, something must be done, then openly offer the solutions to the problems they have themselves created. Problem, reaction, solution. Who benefited from the Oklahoma bomb? Not the people of Oklahoma, not the people who died and lost children and relatives in that bomb. One group of people and one group of people only benefited from Oklahoma. Anyone who wanted to centralize power even further in America. Because anti-terrorism bills went through Congress that took away basic freedoms from Americans purely and only because of that bomb. And as independent bomb experts and explosive experts have said, that fuel fertilizer device in the Ryder truck could not possibly have done that damage. It had to be done by high-tech devices on some of the pillars inside the building. So problem, reaction, solution is the classic means of advancing this agenda and getting the population to demand you do it, even though they don't know the agenda exists. And the Second World War, like the First World War, were global examples of this. As I've shown in my books like And the Truth Shall Set You Free and The Biggest Secret Come to That, the Second World War was the creation of a brotherhood, a global elite, that was funding all sides, that had control of the leaders of all sides, and just played them off against each other to create a war, a problem, which then had a solution. As I, again, myself and many other researchers have shown, Soviet communism was funded from Wall Street and London. The Nazis were funded from Wall Street and London through the Bank of England and through the German subsidiaries of American and British multinational corporations, not least the Rockefeller Standard Oil. The front men of the war were Joseph Stalin in Russia, front man for this brotherhood. You had Winston Churchill in England, whose image left us by conventional history is an absolute farce. This guy was a man of war, among many other things. In America, you had one of the classic frontmen of the 20th century for this brotherhood, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, comes from one of the elite aristocratic French bloodlines. In Germany, you had Adolf Hitler, who was put in there by a network of secret societies, the Thule Society, the Vril Society, the Edelweiss Society, that locked into this global brotherhood. And they were funded by American loans and in the way that I've just talked about. So you create two sides. Incidentally, again, sun cycles, numerology, certain years, certain things happen. You look at 1933. 1933, the number of things that happened in that year, that's when the pyramid and all-seeing eye went on the dollar bill. That's when Roosevelt stole the gold from the American people. That's when Hitler came to power. That's when Roosevelt came to power. No accident. All by design. And then you get two sides and you play them off against each other in a war. And from the war, at the end of the Second World War, in such a few years, the human race was mentally, physically, emotionally, and mentally wiped. Exhausted. And in that mode, we are putty in the hands. What did people say? This can't go on. Something must be done. What are they going to do about it? What do they do about it? The United Nations, European Union, centralization of power, then we won't have another war. As I've shown in my books, documents exist that show that the Second World War was planned as the First World War was ending, probably before that. And if anyone thinks that it's not possible for a few to control the world, you're looking at it. How many people in Britain, America, Germany, Australia, South Africa, France, all these different countries, how many of those people wanted to go to war in the First World War? Hardly any of them. They want to be at home with their families, seeing their kids grow up. So why were they there? They were there because the pyramid structure and the hierarchy in this country persuaded its population they had to fight the people in this country. The little hierarchy in this country persuaded their population they had to fight this country, and these two hierarchies locked into one hierarchy, which was pulling strings of all sides. And there was a song in the 60s by a guy called Donovan, sang by a guy called Donovan, which went like this, which sums up where we're at with this. It went, he's 5'2" and he's 6'4". He fights with missiles and with spears. He's all of 31 and he's only 17. He's been a soldier for 1,000 years. He's a Catholic, a Hindu, an atheist, a Jain, a Buddhist and a Baptist and a Jew. And he knows he shouldn't kill, and he knows he always will. Killing for me, my friend, and me for you. And he's fighting for Canada, he's fighting for France, he's fighting for the USA. And he's fighting for the Russians, and he's fighting for Japan. And he thinks we'll put an end to war this way. And he's fighting for democracy, he's fighting for the Reds. He says it's for the peace of all. He's the one who must decide who's to live and who's to die, and he never sees the writing on the wall. But without him, how could Hitler have condemned him at Laval? Without him, Caesar would have stood alone. He's the one who gives his body as a weapon of the war, and without him, all this killing can't go on. He's the universal soldier, and he really is to blame. His orders come from far away no more. They come from here and there and you and me. And brothers and sisters, can't you see? This is not the way we put the end to war. And that sums up a very simple truth. When we stop playing the game, there is no game. The few can only control the world and manipulate wars if we fall for it. Because we fight them and they start them. And when they've started them and we fought them, they recreate the world in the image that they want. So we went from global elite controlling both sides, conflict, United Nations, European Union, in both world wars. Power was in far fewer hands at the end of the war than it was at the start, and that was the reason for the war. Another problem, reaction, solution, which I'll talk briefly about, that is going to be played in the next few years, it would look like, maybe even sooner than that, is the idea there's some extraterrestrial invasion. These so-called flying saucers have been around for a long time. They're flown by humans. Been around for a long time. It's a very straightforward technology. But if you, going back to that knowledge, ignorance pyramid at the start, if you keep people in ignorance of what's possible, when they see things flying around that they don't believe humans can create, then they think extraterrestrial. And there's a scam being played here in which, while these extraterrestrial created and connected bloodlines have been running the world and still are all these thousands of years, that we're going to be persuaded that there's some extraterrestrial invasion coming in. And what will that justify? Centralization of global government, global army, and all these different things. And that's being played now. We're being prepared for it with more and more of these extraterrestrial stories coming out through things like X-Files, made by Fox Television, owned by Rupert Murdoch, which is owned by this brotherhood. Things like Independence Day, made by 20th Century Fox, owned by Rupert Murdoch, who is owned by this brotherhood. Things like Alien Resurrection, made by 20th Century Fox, owned by Rupert Murdoch, who is owned by this brotherhood, and so on and so forth. So problem, reaction, solution happens on many, many levels. And if we keep reacting, something must be done. Oh my goodness me, save me. This will just go on. We have to ask, I would suggest, a very simple question when these things happen. Who benefits? Who benefits from me believing what I'm being asked to believe about this event? And if who benefits, and invariably it does, anyone who wants to centralize power in the world, we should do a lot of thinking before we jump in and say, do it, anything. To change the situation we're in.